Alrighty, we are set and ready to roll. Welcome to the Media Bits Power Hour. We're delighted that all of you are here today, and we hope to infuse, share, and guide you with tools, tips, resources, and strategies that will help you win as advertising and media sales professionals and leaders. We recognize that we have newspapers, magazines, publications, websites, e-newsletters. You get our drift? Lions and tigers and bears, oh my, lots going on. But all of us have a common theme and a common thread, and that is that we sell advertising, and we're proud of it. And we do it well, and we want to do it even better. There is no pop quiz today regarding selling with teardowns. Many of you have asked, what's a teardown? Well, it's our first point, and we'll be sharing that with you. As always, honoring the very best in adult education, we make it very simple to join us, simply to dial in. As you're getting settled in here, though, please go ahead and print off the four key points that we sent with our meeting program. We'll be talking about those. We're going to work our way through. But the most important part here, just honoring the very best in adult education and learning, is that the more notes you're taking, the more that you're learning. And we want you to be actively participating. We'll also field your questions during the course of the program. We'll tell you more about how to do that by just simply hitting reply to the confirmation that brought you here. But first and foremost, I always like to get started with Jed and MediaBid. Their wonderful company and team have been incredibly supportive, going all the way back to calendar year 2006, Jed, we began these. So, Jed, how about some opening words about you and MediaBid and what's cooking as we look across the space?
Sure. MediaBid is really thrilled to be able to help put these on. Ernest brings an enormous amount of energy and knowledge to these phone calls, and we always look forward to learning from him, as well as helping to coordinate them. MediaBid is a company that helps facilitate print ad sales. I'm the president. Prior to MediaBid, I'd worked in newspapers and had started a chain of weekly newspapers, which I sold. So I have a lot of firsthand experience of the issues that Ernest is talking about and people are dealing with. Currently, I'm the president of MediaBid, and MediaBid is facilitates the buying and selling of print ad sales. We have sort of found a niche where we've been able to grow substantially over the last couple of years, even despite what's been going on in the print world, and we're primarily doing that by reaching out to advertisers who traditionally don't use print, and getting them reinterested in print by showing them the ROI, the return on investment that they can get from spending money in newspapers and magazines. So we'd love to work with you on that, and we'd love to get you involved in MediaBid. There's no cost, and it's a pretty easy process. And if you already are involved, and would like to talk more about how you can be more involved, we'd love to talk to you as well. So we're almost always here and talking to publications. So we appreciate you for joining us, and if you have any questions after the call, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And Jed, thank you so much for your warm introduction. For those who are joining us, please take a minute to go surf the site of MediaBid, learn more about what they do, ask questions about how they can help you drive additional revenue. They are wonderful partners. They get and understand our advertising space, and they will categorically help you win and help you drive additional revenue. So thank you, Jed, every step of the way. It's always a pleasure working together, going all the way back to 2006. To all of you, my name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I began in publications in the mid-'80s. 25, 26 years ago. Launched my company 17 years ago. We work with hundreds of publications in 8 time zones around the world, working just like we're doing here, by phone, by email, and by conference call. Certainly, our approach to advertising sales is all about what sets us apart, what helps us win. And over the last 50 hours that myself and Jed have come here together, we have done just that. We also have a very knowledgeable search engine optimization team. We developed that because clients wanted more visibility for their websites, their media websites, and we took it a step further and also began to help them with their strategies helping their advertisers. It's been a wonderful journey. We also have a very large footprint across the LinkedIn space. LinkedIn is the single deepest vein of gold we have ever observed or found in the sales and marketing world. We currently run one of the top 300 groups. We have more than 40,000 members of 1.3 million groups across LinkedIn. So come join us. We have a LinkedIn group called Advertising Sales Success. It was also in the invitation and the confirmation that you were sent in order to join our programs. Last but not least, we help our clients buy and sell media groups and media properties. And if you ever need assistance or help on that, we are more than happy to help you as well. So today we're going to be talking, Jed, about selling with teardowns. And we actually, Jed, had emails coming in, people saying, I've been in the sector. I don't know the jargon teardowns. Or, what is a teardown? I don't understand. Or, I'm looking forward to the meeting, but I don't know what a teardown is. So, Jed, it was sort of fun this last week watching some of those roll by, yes?
Right, yeah, no, and I'm not sure that I could have offered much, much in the way of education.
Well, listen, since I know you like to fish, it will tie the story in. So, okay. Four key points that we're going to be covering here today. Let's begin with point number one. What is a teardown? How can full-page ads stapled to a conference room wall and a giant shark hook motivate an advertising sales team? So this is one of those, Jed, that begins with once upon a time. You're sitting around in a conference room. This was back in my corporate days. This was in the Inland Empire. It was called the Hub of the Universe. I thought, my gosh, it's something out of Star Wars. Inland Empire, for all of you to know, is the San Bernardino Riverside County area. It's to the east of Los Angeles, between Los Angeles and Palm Springs. There are sprawling homes and neighborhoods. These are also the places where people would commute for an hour or two, Jed, each way at the start of their day. Imagine that. Here's my windshield, and I'll be looking at it for the next hour or two to get to my job. I'll work 8 hours, and I'll do the same process coming all the way back around.
Not because of traffic?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, definitely. Some of the worst traffic I've ever seen on the 5, the 10, the 215, the 210, you name it. The traffic in Southern California is rather extreme. I'm sitting there with a sales team, a relatively new team, and we're talking about our publication. And if you could sort of imagine, it was the whisper of success. We had about 20 ads. I used to go to board meetings back east, and the New York investors would come in and they would frown at me and say, Ernest, will you ever make a dollar in these markets? Ernest, will these markets ever succeed? And they would have me bring my publication that was a wispy and whisper 20 pages, and then I had to bring my competitor, which was the thump of success, 200-plus pages, Jed. Now, probably the most formidable competitive situation I've ever been in, and frankly, it's this kind of story that I'm going to share related to this because it sets the framework for what a teardown is, and then we're going to talk about the pieces. But it was one of those times that, you know, when the kitchen gets hot, you either get out or you roll up your sleeves and you sweat. And frankly, out in the Inland Empire, there was a lot of sweating, not only physically because it was so hot, but mentally. And sort of thinking about, you know, why are we 20 pages and why are they 200? And quite honestly, there had been a lot of turnover in the market, a lot of sales leadership that had moved around. And like many of you have experienced, you know, whenever there's transition in the sales team, advertisers can smell fear. Advertisers can smell turnover, hence lack of success. Advertisers can smell, that the turnover must mean that the company's not supporting the team. Whatever it is, Jed, you know, when you have a lot of turnover on a masthead, it's never a good thing for that publication, website, or media play. You know what I'm saying? So as we sat there as a group, and the other reason why this other publication was so large was because they had a head start. They got in the market. They solidified their base. They started to grow. They grew even faster. They were gifting and giving away ads to build momentum. So there was a lot of puffery in their publication. So there we sat. And what we sat and realized was most of their publication were full-page ads. There was not a lot of editorial in these particular publications, but there were full-page after full-page after full-page. So imagine 200 pages of full-page ads, one after another, one prettier than the next, and beautiful photos and descriptions and so forth. And then we started to look at the distribution story. What was our distribution versus theirs? Now, in this particular space, there was a lot of circulation. If all of you have been in and out of grocery stores, drug stores, convenience stores, you will notice that there are wire racks at the exit door. That was not always that way. In the 80s, you would settle in, and even into the early 90s, you would go into a grocery store, and if there were 10 pubs, there were 10 racks, different sizes, different shapes, different colors. Those store managers had a real concern that people were going to trip and fall over those racks. So in the mid-80s, myself and a partner of mine built what we called the first community racks. And today, when you see racks in any grocery store, convenience store, drug store, that came as a genesis of work that I was doing in my California days. Way before it rolled out nationwide, it was intended to solve the problem. And the problem was the store managers were concerned about somebody tripping over those. So in the Inland Empire, we did a little study, Jen. And we looked at the number of grocery stores and where we had racks versus our competitors. And then we looked at the grocery stores, and we looked at the grocery, drug, and convenience stores. And what we realized is we had a pretty good story. We actually had a better story. So here we were at 20 pages, and we had a competitor at 200 pages. And we realized that we actually had a better story. It was about 50-50. We controlled about half the locations. They controlled about half. So you would think in terms of the page count, we should have about half, and they did as well. But nobody knew that in the market. So that was one of our first opportunities to realize that there was a significant story, and we built a pie chart. And we built a pie chart that showed who controlled what, total number of stores, who controlled what percentage of grocery and drug and convenience stores, and we began to use that as a tool. We then, Jed, were sitting there in this meeting, and over the course of time, over the next few weeks, we began to realize that wouldn't it be fun, and somebody mentioned, I don't remember where it came from, but wouldn't it be fun take all these full pages and put them up on the wall, staple them up to the wall, and begin to really think about who these advertisers were, a real visual deal. I was like, hey, there's the wall, there's a stapler, pull up the ad, let's go. Years later, Jed, we were interviewing a sales rep from this very competitor who said, we used to come and look, their offices were nearby, and they said, we used to come and look in your windows just to see what was up on the wall. We knew that you were going after all of our full pages. We could see them all up on the wall. As time went by, we realized probably we had something more valuable. We began to close the blinds, but we thought that was pretty funny.
Right.
and then, Jed, we said, listen, gang, you see all these full pages? We're sitting at 20 pages. We got a board of directors that doesn't believe in us, wonders if we'll ever make a dollar. In fact, if we don't make a dollar, they're going to close us. And while we're doing better in San Diego and we're doing okay in Orange County and we're not yet into Los Angeles, we've got to make this thing rock. There's major opportunity. And, of course, you take 200 full-page ads and you take that annualized. It was just, you know, lots and lots, millions of dollars of advertising that we were not getting a piece of. So it got even more fun. And all of a sudden we began to say, well, wow, look at that. That advertiser just moved into our magazine. And so the sales team would go up and put an X through it, and that was about it. Somebody got the wild idea and said, well, wouldn't it be great? You know, we're gonna drive our success right through the heart of our competitors. And the lights go on again, and team is kind of buzzing. What about, and I don't know where this erupted, Jed, but what about a shark hook? Hey, Ernest, this is what we think will be great. So the team goes out to a fishing store, and they buy the biggest chain they possibly can. We're talking about if you were going out to fish, Jed, for the biggest shark you possibly could, you would get these big chain links that are like the size of your hand. And then they went out and bought a shark hook, and the shark hook was the length of your arm. The biggest hook you have ever seen, they said, we've got this chain, Ernest, and we've got this hook. And I was like, wow, you guys are serious. Yeah, we do. We're going to drive the success right through the heart of the competitors. And so every single time we sell a page that was in a competitor and we use our teardown strategy, we're going to tear down that from the wall. That's how we got the name teardown, and drive it right through the shark hook. And I was like, well, where do you want to put the shark hook? And they said, Ernest, we want to hang it right in the middle of the conference table. We've already called the building engineers. They're going to come in and attach it to the concrete in the ceiling, bring the chain all the way down, and the shark hook will sit right in the middle of our conference room table. And every single time we move a page that's a full page into our magazine and tear it down from the wall and bring it to our site, it goes right through the shark hook.
Nice.
Okay? What a visual, right?
Yep.
So the world of this shark hook went on to take on a life of its own. Then we began to build sales boards. Now, try to imagine, Jed, a sales board that's 5 feet tall and 20 feet long. Take the entire wall of a conference room. Fill it with sales progress. Fill another board with renewals. Fill another board with the top 10 that we're targeting. And every single sales rep had their own color ink. So, Jed, if yours was, you know, red, I could see all the red that you had up on all these boards. All right, and if mine was green, you could see all the green. So we began to use the word ink. Hey, did you get ink? Hey, what ink is going up on the board? Hey, where's my green ink? Come on, I've got new sales. I've got renewals. Come on. And at the beginning of every sales meeting, you would get up, the salesperson would get up, grab their ink and update all the sales boards, and then go over to the wall and tear down the full page ads that they sold, driving it right through the shark hook, not only in a moment that was rather fun for the group, but it was a reminder that we are going to drive our success right through the heart of our competitors. So in this story, we then went on to create a growth chart. So imagine for a moment, Jed, when you have a publication that's going to grow from 20 pages to 100 to 200 like ours did, and then ultimately all the way up to 300 pages, that's a beautiful curve going up, sort of like a hockey stick. Imagine a competitor, though, on the other side, that starts at 200, falls to 150, falls to 100 at the same time you're growing to 300. So you sort of pause and go, okay, so you've got one graph with a hockey stick going up and the other with a hockey stick going down, almost like the letter X. And as we began the growth of our pages and pulling ads from our competitors, we grew, they declined, and we built a growth chart. So we've got shark hooks, we've got pages up on the wall, everybody's got their own ink, growth charts, pie charts, all of this is flying around. It went on to become a model city and a model market for a company that had been about in the business for about 30 years. They had never seen this kind of growth across more than 90 cities and markets than we experienced in the Inland Empire. Comments or observations, Jed, as I explain the teardown, which obviously is a story that's going to weave us into the meat of what we're going to do, but your observations as you're listening to that.
Well, I'm just curious about just some of the specifics. Like, did you meet every day? Would you do this every day, or was it more of a weekly meeting?
It was typically, I'm a believer in sales meetings that encompass all of the team, including collections, admin, circulation, distribution, operations, even editorial. I like to have all of the team together once a week, and then I like a sales meeting separately. So more classically, a team meeting on Mondays, and then Wednesday or Thursdays, just a sales focus. So the sales meetings typically happen then, and that's when we review it. Needless to say, we also, I almost forgot, the ring of success. We had a captain's bell. We had a captain's bell sitting in the conference room. So that was stuck on the wall. So you could ring the bell when you got a sale, the ring of success. You could tear down the full page ad into the shark hook. And then, of course, when we came back each week, we got a chance to celebrate it again. So there was always a lot of festivities. When you sell with that kind of excitement, when you sell with that kind of energy and mojo, it's like you're not even working. It's like you're just walking on air. You know what I'm saying?
How did you work it? And maybe you want to wait for this for later, but in terms of defining sort of which salespeople would go after which of the ads, would you divide it by territory, or did you consider new advertisers sort of, you know, anyone's domain?
Yeah, it's a great question. That really relates to territory management. Right. And I know we had some questions that came in advance about this, so that's cool. Well, let's just weave it in right here. I'm a believer in assigning territories. Now, whether that's assigning by alpha, I'll take A to L, you take M to Z, whether that's by geography, I'll work on this side of the 10, you work on that side of the 10. Whether it's the size of the account or the potential, so that we have I've got 10 A's, 10 B's, and 10 C's in terms of potential, and you do as well. Whether it's about tenure, and tenure means the larger portfolios. There's a number of ways to divvy up a territory, but I am a passionate believer that you want to assign people to accounts. The reason I say that is because advertisers don't want three phone calls in the same week from the same company, just a different person.
Sure.
And you want a continuity. I am also, though, not a believer that accounts don't get rotated. Minimum twice a year, maybe three, depending on the scenario, accounts do get reviewed and rotated. And it goes like this. Number one, these are your prospects. Number two, you're responsible to make notes in them. Number three, if you're not making notes, it tells me you haven't gotten to them. Those are automatically rotated. Automatically. You're not making progress. So you're assigned 100 and you haven't gotten to 30. Those are rotated and gone. I also believe that once you've given a sales presentation in that rotation period, that you do have 30 days or 45 days to be able to work it, to finish it up, and if not, it gets passed along. Okay? So I always try to, as a sales leader, Jed, always ensure that, you know, how would it feel to me? Well, if I'm not working my 30, I didn't earn it. Now, if I did make a presentation today and the rotation starts July 1st, or August 1st, I surely need to know that I've got to wrap that up, close it, or it may also be rotated. So you try to make it in terms of, you know, what's fair to the individual and, of course, to the company. Does that answer your question about the territories and the assignments?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah?
I think it's an interesting part of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we did have a question that came in from Tyler asking about what are some good sales contest ideas. So, Tyler, related to point one, before we go to number two, a wealth of ideas. I mean, you could have sales contests tied to new biz by dollars percentage, renewal percentages. How about percent to budget or quota? How about this period of time over the last year? There's all kinds of ways. I like individual sales contests. I like team contests, and I'll take it even further. I like contests that involve the entire organization. For example, if you want to do a sales contest that rewards salespeople, production's in the back going, yeah, isn't that great? You know, that group won, you know, $4,000, and we're back here with, you know, 40 more ads. I like contests, Tyler, that tie everybody in, and there's a number of ways to do it. So some contests in the course of the year will target just sales. Individual performance, some I like to do sales team performance, and some I like to include the overall. In terms of contests, I also like to measure ads taken from competitors, which ties right into our tie-down meeting here. I also like contests that relate to number of new meetings. Number of new meetings, that's the lifeblood. That doesn't say closed sales, but that's the lifeblood of any advertising group. In terms of contests, I like to see us rank them by the month, by the rolling 90 days, by the same period last year, by year-to-date, or the rolling 12 months. So when I build sales contests with my clients, there's at least three or four or five categories, and then there's another three or four or five terms, and then we typically go two, three, four, five deep. I am not a believer in listing everybody because that is demoralizing. If I look across and there's four categories and there's four different terms, that's 16 ways that I could have placed. If I don't see my name in any of those 16 spots, I'm surely certain that I'm not doing good enough, and I better go find my sales manager or the owner or my VP of sales. Okay? And obviously, we get our own individual reports. I'm also a big believer on monthly reports that go out to our team individually so they can see their performance in terms of how they're doing. So, Tyler, I'm hoping that is helpful. For those of you that would like to ask additional questions, just send a hit reply to the confirmation that got you here, or send an email to Ernest@powerhour.com. We'll look to work and weave your questions in. If along the way we don't answer them, we'll do them as a follow-up, certainly. So thank you, Tyler, for your question. Let's move to point number two, if we could, Jed. Let's talk about, in point number two, we said we would address why is it mission critical to produce monthly ad drop reports for the competitors you are selling against. So these kinds of reports also tie into the teardown model. You need to have a handle on who you're competing with and who is doing what. So number one, it has to measure who is new. Who went into a competitor's publication, e-newsletter, or onto their website that's brand new? And whatever that cycle is, are we talking, you know, if we're daily, if we're talking weeklies, quarterlies, monthly, bi-monthly, whatever the frequency is, every single time that your competitors come out, you need this analysis to be done. And I should probably, Jed, shape it and just say up front that this is the kind of project, seriously, that we hire interns for. This is $10 an hour work. Please, all of you, as sales leaders and as executives in your companies and as C-level leaders and owners and presidents, please do not believe that this is your task. This is yours to configure it. When I first began, Jed, with this, I had a high school student that would come in every other Thursday. That was the frequency of my main competitor. Come in the evenings, produce the report, and the very next morning we would meet as a team to see. It was like every other Friday morning you had an update and you knew exactly what was happening in your marketplace. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. And you would monitor all publications that you compete with, dailies, weeklies, mm-hmm. everything.
Absolutely everything. And you could have, you know, three or four or five interns that are each doing their own analysis. Because what happens is you become faster and better when you really are working on one, or maybe you have an intern that works on two. These, by the way, could be high school students. These could be your neighbors down the street. These could be college interns. Reach out to your local college and look at speak to the marketing department and the marketing communication. They're always looking for internships. And you can give nice letters of recommendation. Jed, I have a number of students that work behind the scenes for my company. I've got one who's heading to Yale. I have a couple at Penn. I have one at Columbia. I mean, smart, bright young men and women who work behind the scenes on projects and white paper and analysis and dashboards that drive those for my company. Okay? So I've done this for a very, very long time. I love working with 20-somethings, and I love helping them get a little taste of business experience in a business environment. So in terms of an ad drop report, so what is new? This is a big one now. What is new? And let's imagine for just a second that it's, you know, ABC Tubbs that places an ad on a website or a publication of my competitor. ABC Tubbs. Well, my first piece is ABC Tubbs even a prospect? So I've identified that it's new on this spreadsheet. I know that they just came in with a full page. They're called ABC Tubbs. So my reaction to that is the first piece is, hey, is that even in my sales database? Okay, if it's not, wow, shame on me. I didn't even know ABC Tubbs was out there. But now I do. So an ad drop report helps me identify prospects that I might have missed. Number two. If, in fact, ABC Tubbs, Jed, was actually in my database, my next question as a leader is, who was that assigned to? Mary, Tina, Bill, Rick? Let me go look to see who is assigned to. And the next piece is, where were their last meeting notes? Oh, that's interesting. It's been assigned to Mary. She's had it for 120 days, and she's done nothing. That a full-page ad just went in to a competitor. Hey, I'm not real happy. I'm sitting at the end of that conference table, or I'm sitting on a conference call. I am not happy that Mary or Tina or Rick or Bill got not only scooped, but there was no sales activity at all in our CRM internally, and in fact an ad was generated. Okay, or a new ad went in, we've made a proposal, there's multiple notes of follow-up, we saw the prospect at a recent show, we sent them two emails in the last week, at least I know we were in the hunt. Now the question is, did we deploy all of our sales school skills? Did we deploy and show media comparisons, pie charts, growth charts, you know, CPMs, what else, you know, Google Analytics? What else did we do to win or not? Now we're back to a sales strategy and some selling coaching rather than, hey, we got absolutely sucker punched. ABC Tubbs bought an ad and we didn't even know who they were. Do you follow me on that, Jed?
Yeah. That makes a big difference.
It really does. And unless you're tracking it with this level of specifics, you can't get granular. You can't talk sales strategy unless you have this spreadsheet in place. Let's talk about the next one. An ad goes out. Why did that ad go out? Why did ABC Tubbs, who placed three full-page ads, now go out? Holy smokes. I'm licking my chops. I'm going to go get competitive juice. I'm going to learn that they got no results. I'm going to learn that they couldn't stand their rep. I'm going to learn that what was promised in terms of extra circ didn't happen. I love that when an ad goes out, but only I can go out, call ABC Tubbs, and ask what happened. How about if it was a half page, and the half page grew to a full page? How about if there was a shift in ad size? Why do I want to track that? Well, I might learn something like it was doing so well, I doubled the size, or I might learn that it was doing so poorly, they gifted another half page. Holy smokes, I'm going nuts. If I learn that ABC Tubbs was gifted a half page, and and there's 40 half pages in that publication, I'm calling all 40 of them and say, hey, by the way, you know, would you like to know how to get another half page and not pay another more? ABC Tubbs just did.
Right.
Okay? I'm going to salivate over that. That is a really, really big deal. Same goes for websites and advertising there, and the same goes for e-newsletters, all right? Who went down? ABC Tubbs went from a full page down to a half. What happened? Not happy, moved their dollars around, changed their marketing approach. I want to know if it moved down. So this piece of change, up, down, in, or out, tells us volumes about a publication competitor, also a website competitor, also a e-newsletter competitor. And I must tell you, Jed, to this day, I still, without having ad drop reports today, I still pay attention in my sector. That's interesting. So-and-so did an educational webcast 6 months ago. They've never come back. So-and-so used to advertise on the right-hand side of that e-newsletter. Where do they go? I still find myself paying attention. You never stop looking at it from a critical eye. But I want all of you to know, if you believe for a moment that you can do this with your gut, you will never get to the level of specifics. Because you take a spreadsheet like this and you sort it by the changes, then you sort it by the territory rep, or you sort it by the industry or sector, you will get insight you have never, ever imagined possible. But if you are not taking it to this level of granularity, you will never get the kind of specifics that we're talking about. You will not know that the tub category is twice as active as the carpet category. You will never know that most of the full pages are happening in automotive, not in new home sales. You cannot intuitively know this. It's too much data to process.
How do advertisers typically react when you approach them with this information that, you know, hey, I noticed you just went from a full to a half, or you know, or looks like you used to be advertising in three publications and you dropped it down to one.
They respond favorably, meaning they know you're paying attention to their business. And they know that you know your sector and that you know your competitors. And frankly, they're not going to get calls like that once every 10 years because no one else is out doing it, quite frankly, Jed.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, if you had 20 salespeople in a market that they all would be, you know, utilizing this strategy. This is not something that we see as common in the media advertising sales world. And frankly, it says to advertisers, I care, I'm paying attention, I notice you went up or down, and I'm just curious why. Simple. Okay? The big ones include when I see someone categorically come out of a publication, those advertisers can't wait to bend my ear. Because it's usually some version of, I did not get what I paid for, or I did not get what I expected, or I did not get the results. Make sense?
Yep.
All right, very good. So, point number two, it is mission critical to have an ad drop report for each of your competitors on the print, e-newsletter, and website side. So, is it possible, Jed? I mean, in my earliest days, I would track three competitors and a couple of newspapers. When I moved to Los Angeles, I had 18 competitors. The whole thing changed. 18. You know what we did? We tracked 18. That's all. You know, I mean, it's you just do what you do, and you do what you have to do. And I realize in our electronic media world, it's possible to have even more. That's okay. Assign an intern or two to a couple of them. They'll get faster. They'll get better. They'll know the names, and they'll be able to whiff right through this kind of analysis. And you can take it to whatever level of granularity. You might have them only measure full pages or half pages or those that have the biggest splash across websites or on e-newsletters. You can, you know, decide how deep you want to go in terms that you don't have to measure every toothpick. But you can measure the big stuff and even the medium stuff, and that's where the rubber meets the road. Let's talk about number three, and we have some questions that came in, one from David and one from Rebecca. We'll weave those into point number three, and we'll field your questions. Please continue to just send them into Ernest@powerhour.com, and we will weave those in for you. Point number three, we agreed to cover. What key information do you need from the rate cards of the publications or websites or e-newsletters that you are most directly competing with? So, Jed, as you know, going all the way back over 50 hours of our working here together, going back to 2006, we've done numerous calls about media comparisons. Those are entire calls just focused on that. We're going to touch on that here today. But the basic bottom line is this, gang. You cannot compete against competitors unless you know what you're competing with. In boxing, if you have an opponent in front of you, you can at least see where they are so that you know where your hook or jab is going to go. But if I blindfold you and have you close your eyes and you can't see your competitor, categorically, absolutely, you will not win. There is no way that you will win. You don't know where you're throwing that punch. You know you have a competitor. You know you're in the ring, but you're going to flail helplessly. It will be painful to watch you. And without you having media comparisons and without you having the rate cards of your competitors, it is painful to have a sales strategy that will help you win. It cannot be done. Okay? So recognize that we started with assessing competitors. We've worked in to add drops, and now we're weaving this in. You must have those rate cards. What are the things that you're going to learn from those rate cards? Well, let's start with the big stuff. Let's talk about distribution. Let's talk about circulation. How large is it? Where is it at? Where are their advantages? How does it compare and contrast to yours? Annualize, if you annualize their circ, and we go down this path often, I work with a number of companies that put out publications, Jed, once a month. So they have 12. They compete with those who put out every 4 weeks, so that's 13. I've seen others that go out every 2 weeks versus twice a month. So now you're playing with 24 versus 26. I know it sounds like we're splitting hair, but it's not. That has got to be annualized. Everything you do when you talk about CPM, your cost per thousand, reach, frequency, and what's happening with any kind of CERC numbers or distribution numbers, you have to annualize it so that you can get to an apples-to-apples comparison. And you might think that advertisers get it. They don't. I've walked into meetings, Jed, and I've worked with my clients over the years where it's like, hey, they're cheaper than us. How are they cheaper? Take that number times their 26 issues and take yours times 12. They're more. And they're like, oh yeah, you're right, but the advertisers think they're cheaper. Yeah, that's right, because they cut the rate in half, but they're still 20% more than you. And they only have three-quarters of the CERC as you, so the cost per thousand means that you're a 40% more efficient product. But if you don't know that, how in the world can your advertisers, or will your advertisers know that? And please make note of this. Whose responsibility is it to educate the marketplace? Who is the world's expert and the only expert in your space, in your sector, in your advertising world? It is you. You are 100% responsible. You are 100% the expert. So if advertisers believe, perceive, or falsely believe that your competitor is less, or is a better, or is more efficient, or has a better cost per thousand, or has better CERC and distribution, if they believe it, their perception is their reality until you undo it, until you change it. And that is your mission, and that is your journey. Let's continue. Cost per thousand. You've got to break it out. CPM. You have to break it out to the lowest common denominator so that you can talk about what the impact is. A couple of comments on this, too. Remember that you're going to include your print. You're going to include your Google analytics, meaning your number of visitors. When you're figuring your cost per thousand, you're going to figure your e-newsletter reach and approach, and you're going to figure and calculate your footprint across LinkedIn or Facebook. Now, Jed, just a quick example on that. I have about 40,000 members on LinkedIn that go out every single day. Every 24 hours, all 40,000 receive something from these groups. To put in perspective, that's like filling the Denver Broncos Stadium every 24 hours. And I have the largest footprint in that. 40,000 times 30, 1.2 million. 1.2 million times 12, 14 million annual is my distribution pipe. So here I am talking about LinkedIn as a distribution pipe in the same way that I think of print circulation, mail circulation, controlled circ, magazine sales, the same way. So remember that all of you have more pipes and more to take credit for and more to measure than maybe you were thinking about 3 minutes ago. What you measure is what improves, and what you measure is what you can take credit for, as long as you can defend it and as long as you can validate it. So, Jed, if you said, Ernest, where are your 40,000? I'd say, Jed, please, I just sent you 10 URLs. Click on them. There are my 10 groups. Jed, you want to know about my website visitors? Good. I just sent you the Google Analytics for the month, the last 30 days. Go take a look. You can see my visitors. By the way, have you ever seen a Google Analytics report from any of the competitors that you're advertising with? Do you know what their number of website visitors are?
Yeah, I mean, almost no one gives that out.
You bet. And you know what, Jed? I'm a believer that in order for me to drive sales, I'm going to show you everything. I'll show you a printer's invoice. I'll show you my postal receipts. I'll show you my CIRC CRM. I'll show you anything that validates and lets me rise above. By the way, I'll show it to you. Certain things I will cloak, obviously, on my printer bill. I'm not going to show you my, you know, what I'm paying, but I'll show you the bill and I'll just black out what I paid. I don't have a problem with that. I'll show you my postal receipt. Oh, my gosh, if I'm a direct CIRC, there it is. Let's go down the other path. In my early days when I was building these pie charts, here were the list of grocery stores. Here, go into every single one. We had binders that we walked into every meeting. We sorted it by A to Z. So you could just say, hey, where's Paco's liquor store? Yep, here it is, P. You know, we'd sort it by the type of location, and we even sorted it by zip code. So we had every distribution location by zip code. So if I was making a presentation in 84098, I could just go right there and say, yep, this is where we are. Here are the surrounding 40 locations just in the zip code. It handles what I call, Jed, it quiets the barking dogs. You know, advertisers or prospective advertisers want to throw you a bone, say, well, you know, one day when your CIRC is better than the others, let me know. Oh, no, wait a minute, I got a binder, it's right here, it's 8 inches thick. What part of my CIRC do you want to talk about?
Let me just ask a question that I suspect people on the phone may have, mm-hmm. and that is, how do you handle the problem of having a product, you know, a publication and the related distribution methods that go with it? How do you handle the problem of having a publication that is on a CPM basis just unable to compete with, for example, you know, a penny saver in a market?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's a general newspaper. Or maybe it's a paper that, you know, or a product that's focused on, you know, on families.
Mm-hmm.
It just, the cost structure of creating something like that is just more than some of the publications that your advertisers anyway perceive that you compete with.
Sure.
Might be a slightly different clientele, but but you know, you still. There's only so many supermarkets in town, right?
Right.
You can only get, you know, and they're making a decision based on, you know, based on your competitors. But how do you sort of, you know, sort of frame it in such a way that you're not sort of setting yourself up for, you know, for failure by using these metrics that you're unable to win with?
It's a great point, and you have to sort of think about it. I mean, you're using a penny saver example, and let's imagine that, you know, I'm a real estate publication, or I'm an apartment publication, or I'm an automotive, right? You know, and an automotive will say, look, I'm in the penny saver. Okay, sure, you are, and let's just go down the path. First, let's measure cost per thousand. I'm going to look at this diamond a couple of different ways. I'm going to look at cost per thousand. I'm going to look at who has what circulation where in this, you know, in this quick penny saver example. Then I'm going to also take it a step further and say, look, penny saver has, yeah, they're working with, you know, 20 realtors. I've got a publication with 200 realtors. When the consumer picks it up, they're only focused on homes in mine at 200 pages, and there's only about 20 of those realtors in the penny saver. Let's go down the other path. Here is my readership survey. Look at what we know about the readers of my homes publication compared to the penny saver. Have you ever seen a survey done by them? What does that side by side look like? You know, you try to go down the path, and this really relates to USP, which ties right in here, Jed. What is your unique sales proposition? What is it that sets you apart?
Right.
You know, let's talk about new homes for just a second. For example, our publication is brought to every meeting of the Board of Realtors, where realtors will see each other's homes. Penny saver has never been there. Let's talk about an upcoming a garden show where the exclusive publication is there. A penny saver would never be there. So I don't know without all the specifics, but you can hear the path that I'm going down, which is some version of, you know, you look for the things that set you apart. Unless you're nose-to-nose competitors, and then if you're nose-to-nose, you still have to look for those things that make a difference. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. All right, cool.
Right.
So
but
let's...
It's,
yep.
And it ends up not being just simply a, you know, a straight-on cost comparison. Right.
Oh no! That's a great question. No, it is not. If you just do, and let me just roll back.
Unless
for a
you're
second.
A penny saver.
No. Yeah, let me roll back. When I mentioned media comparisons earlier, right? The signature work that we do, the side by side comparisons, it is not unusual, Jed, that we're looking at CPM and 10 to 25 other factors. 10 to 25 others. So that's just one piece in the whole mix when you're setting yourself apart from competitors. But in that true side-by-side-by-side, going all the way down the columns and making those comparisons, generally 10 to 25 unique, distinct points. CPM is only one of those. Okay? Just one. So thank you for asking that. And tied to this, I mean, everything from what sets us apart from our circulation, our distribution, our editorial, our websites, our LinkedIn groups, our Facebook, show accesses, alliances, exclusives, you know, list access that nobody else has. And by the way, for those of you listening, saying, A, I don't know what those are. Well, that's where you have to begin, which is looking at your media kit and your sales story and your competitors. That's why it's so important to have their media kits. But on the other side of this, it's also very important to recognize that as a leader, if you don't have enough USPs, let's go to the other side of Jed's questions, our question on this. If you don't have enough USPs, things that set you apart, then as a leader, you have to build those. Then let's go work on our website SEO to increase our readership. Let's go work on alliances that will increase the number of our newsletters. Let's go work on the strategies that will increase our LinkedIn groups and our visibility and exposure. You see, you have to now go and say, well, now that we've looked at side-by-side, we don't have enough USPs. We need more. Or in these three areas, our competitors are beating us. What is our strategy so that we can be sitting here 3, 6, 9, and 12 months from today, and now have we overcome that, but we've surpassed the competitors. So that has to come from a leadership perspective, Jed, and that's the other side of the question that you're talking about. Let's, if we could, and recognizing that we're approaching the top of the hour, I want to work on point number 4, Jed, if we could, and then if possible, I'd like to work back to Rebecca and David's question here, but I want to be respectful time-wise. Point number 4 says, keep what you got. Add me in and never change your advertising budget. Huh? How do you do that? So let's work all the way back from this teardown. When we sat there looking at those full pages, we realized the total dollars that were being spent. They were all up on the wall. And what I skipped over, not by accident, because this is where it ties in, is we looked at that annual budget. We said, well, that's interesting, but what if they took those full pages down to a half page? And so the next thing we did is we went and read the advertising agreement that says at any point in time you can take your ad up or down. We were like, wow, there it is. That's the Achilles heel. How did we know that? Because we read the fine print. And as a result of that, we rolled into the full-page advertisers and said, look, you're currently spending X, and we can see that. And by the way, we control more than half the CIRC in this marketplace. We might be 20 pages. They are 200. But let us walk you through a side-by-side comparison, all of what we've done. Let us show you the growth chart. Let us show you the pie chart of the actual visibility of the number of locations. We're in half. So quite honestly, you're not getting half of the marketplace by not being with us. Now, what we'd like to suggest is that you keep your same budget, but include us in. Keep your same budget. And the way that we want to do that is take your full page down to a half and come into our publication with those dollars, and now you can run a side by side. So now you've got a half page there, half page with us. We control half the market in the circulation and the visibility, and we're supremely confident we'll do the job. Sure enough, advertisers began to fold in and said, yeah, that makes sense. And it's the same budget, and I get two sources instead of one. And you've got the other half of the circulation because you're showing me your pie chart. And you've shown me your distribution locations. That makes sense. Let's go. That's how we drove side by side, and we pulled those pages down from fulls to halves. And then when they ran side by side, Jed, the way we grew again is they realized we actually outperformed, that our medium was actually better. Okay, so this piece about how you keep these dollars in. Here's what you need to know. This is a very simple story. Let's take this up another notch. You go into an advertiser, they're in five sources. You might shave a full page to a three-quarter. You might shave a half page to a third. You might help them reduce their frequency. You might help them trim their ad in an e-newsletter or a website. You have to start with the baseline. What are they currently spending, and where are they spending it? You'll learn lots about your competitors. Plus, you've got your media kits of your competitors, so you're learning how close they are paying to the rate card. You establish a baseline for what they're doing, and you say to them, listen, I work with advertising, or I work with businesses like yours all the time. Just like ABC Tubbs, I know everything about Tubbs in our sector. Listen, with your permission, let's walk through. As part of the research today, I know that you're in these three publications, these two websites, and these three e-newsletters. I've done my homework. I know what the rate cards are, and I have sketched source by source by source that you're currently in. I count eight. I have sketched that your budget's $8,000. I want to be your ninth source, and I want to keep you at $8,000. So you're going to have nine sources instead of eight, spending the same $8,000. Are you in agreement with that? Beautiful. Could I, behind the scenes, build a game plan, walk you through it, and show you how I'm proposing to do that? This is absolutely key. I want all of you to know, this is like taking candy from a baby. This is the easiest selling and sales you have ever done, but you have to do it just like we're talking about. And you have to show them that you've done the work. You can't just come in and say, well, Charlie, can you tell me where you're advertising? Well, Charlie, can you pull out? No, you've got to show them you've already done that work. You've got to show them that you already know the media kit prices. Even if they're more or less than they're paying, you've got to show them. If you can't show them, then they'll think you're blowing smoke and they will not let you go forward. But once you do get that information, then you come in and build the revised game plan. And you say, here's what you were doing on the top half of the page. Here are your eight sources and what your spend is. Below are nine sources, adding me in. By the way, annually I have another 1.2 million visitors or readers or subscribers. So you want me, and now you can compare me side by side, and here are the adjustments I'm proposing that you make. Same budget, add me in. And the beautiful part, Jed, about this strategy is that you're not having to say this. Jed, I can see you with eight different advertising sources. Couldn't you just fire one or two of those to open up budgets for me? Which really is my version of saying, A, I'm lazy, Jed, or B, you're making bad decisions, which actually equates to you must not be very smart. Because the pushback you're going to give me is, Ernest, why would I cut those eight sources? They're putting bacon on my table. They're bringing me leads. Who do you think you are? And you end in that very confrontational space. Or if you don't go down the path of revising the current 8,000, then it's, hey, Jed, look, I know you're spending 8,000. I know you're in eight sources. Will you find another 1,000 for me? Now I'm going to get the pushback called, you're not in the budget. I don't like your publication. You won't work. And you end up down that path. You see, so any other option of cut a competitor means that you're telling the advertisers are not smart. Add new dollars means you want new budget, which is where you get the pushback. When you go down the path of keep your same amount, keep your current publications, websites, and e-newsletters, and fold me in for the same amount, who says no to that, Jed?
Right, it's a lot harder to. I mean, I guess redoing creative or redoing contracts, right, would be an objection, but that's probably pretty easily overcome.
Yeah, and I have to tell you that I can remember in the early days, and this ties to sales strategies of field, felt, found. You know how you feel that, you know, everything in that full page ad will not fit into a half page ad, and others like you, Jet, have felt the same way. But what we have found is, let me show you the before and after. And we basically had our art team build half page ads with the copy from the full page ads. And we say, and not only here is the visual, but here's the art file that you can give it to the competitor, and the ad is done. You don't have to even work with your agency. We rebuild it for you.
Right.
And they would be blown away. But can you imagine how frosted our competitors were when they got 40 data files in the span of, you know, a week?
Right.
With 40 ads that were full pages that are now half pages. They literally called our office. I remember getting phone calls. Who do you think you are redoing these ads? Who do you think you are telling our clients that we can scale down? Well, number one, your contract says you can go up and down. Yeah, but that's not your job. Well, yeah, we just helped your advertiser see that. And who do you think are building the files? Well, we just wanted to show the clients that, you know, we could actually take the full-page ad and put it into a half. And, you know, Charlie, we've done 40 more, and we're going to do another 40 more. We're not done because you got 200 pages and we got 20. So you better sit back, relax, and know that we're going to do that across all 200, and we did. Our 20 pages grew to 300, and their 200 pages went backward to 150 and went backward to 100. And to this day in the Inland Empire, the very story that I'm sharing with all of you that goes back to 1988 and into the years of 91 and 92 still stands to this day. The publication that I'm describing still is the dominant publication because of something we did 20 years ago. So let's pause right here. Jed, we have covered an incredible amount of ground. I know we have a few minutes here before the top of the hour. How about some closing words to our group?
Well, I want to just thank everyone for joining us, and again, thank Ernest. I learned a lot, and hopefully you did as well. If you have any questions or comments as a follow-up, you know, we'd love to hear them. They help us not only figure out how much people liked the topic we did, but also help us educate us for future topics. So, you know, again, thanks to Ernest, and thanks to everyone who joined us.
Absolutely, and thank you so much, Jed. So appreciate the support from you and your team over all of these years. It's always a pleasure to converge here together, and thank you for asking our group. You are right. Their topics inspire us. Your questions inspire us and help us go deeper. We cover everything from technology, emerging trends, statistics in the marketplace, sales tools, resources. We watch and comb everything in order to choose and select these topics. And over the next couple of days, myself and Jed will meet, and we'll be talking about our next and upcoming educational program. So please let us know if there's a topic that inspires you or that will help you and your team win. We always want to give you the tools and the resources. Also, please circle back to MediaBids.com. Please review their website and reach out to them. Learn more about what they do. Ask questions about how they can partner and help you win. They are a solid company. They have a wonderful team behind the scenes, and they have a great story specifically for media professionals like you. I just want to wrap up very quickly. There were two outstanding questions, Jed, we didn't get to. David asked a question about the setup of media kits. David, there are 12 specific parts of a media kit in order to win and that feature and showcase your USP. If you'd like to send me your media kit, I'd be more than happy to review it. We'll carve 15 or 20 minutes. We'll chat about it. But we do, on an ongoing basis and for 17 years, help our clients win with their media kits, help tie in pie charts, graphs, media comparisons, all the things that you're listening to here today. So a very important part of that. Rebecca asks, what is the best way to package a print and digital and web and email package? And the answer is, Rebecca, great question. You need all of those, which is what you're asking. You need to be really clear on what your USPs are for each of those. So you need to understand what your competitors are doing versus you. I think you will typically find that you have competitors that do not sort of play land, sea, and air, that do not have the total package. So if you have a print and a digital web component and an e-newsletter component, you are already in about the top 3% in the media advertising world. So you have to break out your USPs. You have to make certain that there's value in the way that you build the bundle, and you have to do something called merchandising your rate card. For those of you that have listened to that program, I think, Jed, we've done it once since 2006, maybe twice. There is a program called Merchandising Your Rate Card. Go listen to that, and if you'd like specific help, I'd be more than happy to speak with you related to that. But how you position your pricing will be exactly a reflection of what you sell. So when you look at your frequencies, we often see mistakes made with frequencies, how many times an ad has to run, and we see very specific mistakes that get made in the pricing strategies. The most significant is there's not a big enough gap, and we have specific formulas for the way that we recommend, and when you put those in place, it gives advertisers easy incentives to move up, to upgrade two ways. A, it makes more sense to buy more, which is in your best interest, meaning buy larger, and the other side, it also gives you the opportunity to sell longer-term agreements because the incentives are there, okay? So if you want to sell larger ads and longer agreements, that's what merchandising a rate card is all about, okay? Rebecca, I'm hoping that is helpful. And David, likewise as well. Thank you so much for the questions. And Tyler, to the question earlier, I know that, Jed, there were a lot of questions that came in since we got rolling here, and we'll handle those on the back end and follow up with them as well. To all of you, make it a wonderful day. Thank you so much. We're right at the top of the hour, as we promise. We want to be respectful of your busy day and your busy time. So thank you so much for joining us. And, Jed, always a pleasure, and we'll be in touch, okay?
Great. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Thanks, Ernest.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.